The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now, in November, voters across the US will go to the polls for the 2026 midterm elections. The entire membership of the House of Representatives will be re-elected or up for re-election, and 35 of the 100 Senate seats are down to be contested as well. A lot of focus already on the election here and the impact it could have on the remainder of the Trump presidency. Brett Bruin is the president of the Global Situation Room and former director of global engagement at the White House during the Obama presidency. I caught up with him a little earlier. I began by asking him where he thinks President Trump is now politically and how unpopular he is, given, I suppose, how poor the polls are and how high inflation is due to the Iran war.
I think he's historically unpopular. And again, I would provide the disclaimer, obviously, having worked for Barack Obama, I tend to see the world through blue-colored glasses. But at the same time, I will acknowledge for the last couple of presidential cycles, Trump has managed to win people over mostly based on his arguments on the economy. Your job prospects, your financial situation will be improved. Now, what was curious, obviously, when he came into office was his overemphasis on tariffs. And yet, I think part of his bet was that Americans would not necessarily associate some of those increases with his tariffs, with his policies. The problem now, and I just was driving past the gas station, dropping my son off to school, and it's $4.19 a gallon, which is extraordinarily high. And you feel that every week, every time that you have to fill up your car. And Trump's arguments of, well, we needed this to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, continue to fall pretty flat on wide swaths of America.
Okay, interesting. Now, so how difficult, I think most people, the analysis I've seen, and I'd like your more in-depth take on it, the analysis I've seen is that the Senate is going to be particularly tricky to win back for the Democrats. Not impossible by any means, very much in play, but much more difficult. Tell us why that is.
More difficult because the Democrats have to contest more seats. And yet, I think what we are seeing is in places like Maine, Georgia, even Ohio, the Democrats, one, they put up better candidates. And this matters a lot. If you go back to the Tea Party elections during the time that I was in the Obama White House, they really crashed and burned because they pulled out these candidates who had no business being standard bearers for the grand old party. Well, we're seeing a little bit of that now, like, for instance, in Texas, where John Cornyn, who is a senior senator in the position of leadership, is being challenged by the Attorney General of Texas, who is this real MAGA firebrand. And, you know, as the rules in Texas go, if you don't get over 50% in the primary, you have to do a runoff. And that's where we are right now. And interestingly, Trump is not endorsed in that race. But what it could mean is James Talrico, who is a state legislator in Texas, he is a pretty publicly avowed Christian, which again, you know, takes some of that air out of the balloon of Republicans propping themselves up as the party of faith, the party of moderation. And so we could see, even in places like Texas, where Republicans either are losing or, quite frankly, they come so close that it sends a warning shot over the bow, because those that are not running now in those Senate elections are going to have to run in many cases in 2 years' time.
So a state like Texas could be in play, because I think, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think I'm right in saying the last Democrat senator in Texas was Lloyd Bentsen back in 1988. Is that correct?
I actually think we've had, not just in the Senate, but look, there were, Ann Richardson was a famous Democratic governor of Texas. And so you have had since Lloyd Bentsen, and I remember when Lloyd Bentsen ran with Michael Dukakis for the vice presidency. Yes, I mean, that was, if you will, a time when Democrats in Texas still were able to win statewide races. But what we are seeing now, and this is the problem for Trump, is when he took office just over a year ago, he was polling at plus 90% of Republicans. That has fallen substantially, not significantly, but we're talking 15% drop in Republican support. What does that mean? It means that those voters aren't necessarily coming out enthusiastic, not for Trump, but they've got to go out for some lesser known politician who's running in that House, in that Senate race. And so right now, while the X factor in the last election presidentially was for Trump, because people just didn't like the policies economically that Biden was driving, and Harris did little to separate herself from it. Now you have the opposite problem, and so those winds are blowing towards the Democrats' camp.
Okay. So do you see a situation where some of those seats that would have been for many years GOP seats, you conceivably can see them falling into Democratic hands come November?
I think they can fall into Democratic hands. And here's the interesting thing. We were having a conversation with some folks up on Capitol Hill last week. These are Republicans, not Democrats. And what they interestingly shared, and I can share with the News Talk audience, is that we will see after November's election a opening of the floodgates of Republican presidential candidates. What does that mean? That means that J.D. Vance or even Marco Rubio are not the heirs apparent to the MAGA throne. These elections potentially will create a splinter effect in the Republican Party, in the MAGA movement. And we're already starting to see some of that with the likes of Tucker Carlson, with the likes of the traditionally faithful who are questioning the Iran war, who are questioning some of these policies. But after November, all of that that is being held back now by the effort to stem some of the losses will break open, because Republicans are going to know that they are now in a race for their own survival. And so I think it's going to be really interesting on that Wednesday after the elections in November, who you see go to Iowa, who you see go to New Hampshire, because those here in the U.S. are the early indications that you've got presidential ambitions.
Okay. What about the House of Representatives? That looks like an easier one for the Democrats.
It does look like an easier one. And obviously, we shouldn't take anything for granted. That being said, and this is the challenge the Democrats have at the moment, is we have a message, we don't have a messenger. And so while we certainly can take some comfort in taking control of the House of Representatives, I don't know that there are many Democrats right now who look to Hakeem Jeffries, who would then ascend to the speakership as the logical primary spokesperson for the Democratic Party. What does that mean then? It means that we are likely to see from the presidential candidates, the likes of Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, Pete Buttigieg, the former Secretary of Transportation, and others, a fight for that mantle, a fight for who can represent the voice of the Democratic Party. And as listeners in Ireland will know, you have our own battles and our own splintering within the party of the moderates who want to hew closer to Buttigieg and Gavin Newsom, and then the likes of the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes and the Bernie Sanders who believe that we need to take more of a leftist approach.
Okay. What's your view on what the Democrats need to do to copper fasten the opportunity in November?
There's no question. We saw it last November here in Virginia, where we sit right now. Abigail Spanberger won the governor's race in what was considered, quite frankly, a purple state, because she focused on the economy, because she tacked to the middle of the ground. Same thing in New Jersey. Michael Sherrill, my old grad school buddy, She won on the same kind of message. And I think we saw that even in places where Democrats didn't win, there was significant progress. And this is where, if you're reading tea leaves and listeners in Ireland want to follow along, you look at some of the elections where Marjorie Taylor Greene's race. Now, obviously, it's a deep red district, but you're talking about significant inroads the Democrats were able to make in that special election because Trump's policies, because the Republicans have grown so unpopular.
Okay. One of the things I've heard, and again, you may correct me on this, is that one of the few advantages the Republicans still retain is a war chest, is cash, is money. Is that a significant factor? Is it as real as I've heard?
It is without question a significant advantage, and one that's likely to remain an advantage for the Republicans. But look, Kamala Harris famously raised boatloads of money and was unable to translate that into votes. And this is where, again, I think the Republicans have to be careful, because you have the likes of the AI companies who are underwriting a lot of the political action committees, and that can create more concern in voters' eyes, that they see in Trump this laissez-faire, this wild west of technology, as taking jobs, as taking opportunities from their children. And that, I think, is a real weakness for Trump. And here's the other problem. You know, Trump has a Marie Antoinette issue. He's building a ballroom. He has painted over, you know, obnoxiously the Oval Office, which, you know, I revered, and I remember bringing foreign visitors through, and they commented on its simplicity and how it represented that true American ideal of the institution and not of the individual. I think Americans feeling that economic pain are really put off and pissed off by what Trump is doing.
So could that ballroom, I mean, could that become a metaphor that for all that's wrong, or the perception of the electorate for all that's wrong with Trump? I'm not comparing him to Ceausescu, that would be unfair, but like a Ceausescu's palace.
No, I remember walking through Ceausescu's palace in Bucharest and thinking, you know, the hubris of a man who's surrounded by a bunch of yes men and yes women in the case of Trump, who are telling him the things that he wants to hear. And this was Biden's problem as well. He did not surround himself with advisors, especially in the Situation Room, who were willing to speak truth to power. Well, Trump's got that problem times 10. And I think we're going to find ourselves in a situation where Trump is going to be a lame Donald Duck starting in November. And what does that mean for his legacy? Because a lot of what he has been doing right now is focused not on the American people, not on the needs of the country. It's focused on his legacy. That's why the Arc of Trump, the ballroom, all of these projects are designed towards putting his gold imprint on this city.
Okay. And yet I look at statistics like only 3 current House Republicans are in districts that Trump lost in 2024. Democrats hold 0 Senate seats in states that Trump has carried every time he's been on the ballot. So I don't disagree or doubt anything you're saying, but it's still a big fence, isn't it, for the Democrats to climb?
It is. And look, there, as we've seen in 2016, and again in the last presidential cycle, there is a undercounted percentage of Americans who will support Trump, will support some of the MAGA politicians, and they're not accurately being reflected, despite, and we've worked with pollsters, including pollsters who have done the largest polls, and they struggle to account for those voters. That being said, I think what we did see in the last local and state elections, and what we are starting to get indications of in some of these special elections, is it's not a one-off. It's not, you know, an isolated candidate who managed to overcome, but the Democrats truly across the board are outperforming. And, you know, I look ahead and wonder what could change the dynamic. Now, tragically, over the weekend, we had that attack on the White House Correspondents Association dinner. And Trump has tried to, and very quickly, in fact, he went straight to the press briefing room and made the case of why he needs a ballroom, even if the ballroom wouldn't fit all of those attendees, even if there are plenty of other federal facilities that, you know, are good for large events. He wants his ballroom. He wants his legacy.
Okay, just a couple of last sort of final questions. You spoke about, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, maybe I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but you almost portrayed the Democrats as an army without a general at the moment. Who would you, do you have a personal preference as to who you'd like to see coming through? Or I don't know if that's something you want to take on.
I'm not making an endorsement at the moment. And quite frankly, no, I haven't seen a candidate yet who has earned my vote. I can tell you, however, what I have seen, and important for listeners to bear in mind, that Barack Obama was a state legislator back when he addressed the Democratic National Convention in 2004. We're not that far away from that factor. And what I saw, for instance, in Minneapolis, in the mayor of Minneapolis, was someone who really cut through in a critical moment, rose to national prominence. So, well, it may not be him. I think we may see moments, and quite frankly, from these midterms, we may see candidates who stand out. And so I would keep my eye beyond necessarily the Buttigiegs, the Harrises, even the Newsoms, because you cannot have hair that is that stiff, and you cannot be as good looking as Gavin Newsom is objectively and win in the middle of this country.
Yeah.
So I think it's important.
Can you be from California and win?
You can be from California if you're Ronald Reagan and if you're a Republican. But if you're a Democrat, then you're a socialist and you're a celebrity and you're out of touch with Americans. So, you know, these are the challenges we as Democrats face in our pursuit of high office.
Okay, final question. What's your best guess as to what will happen in November? And I accept it's a long way out and a lot of things can happen and we don't know what's going to happen with the war in Iran. But what's your hunch?
My hunch is that the Democrats are going to take the House by big numbers. Big numbers being 10, 12 seat advantage. I think in the Senate it will be close, but I think the Democrats edge out by a seat or two. And ultimately, that is going to allow them to throw lots of wrenches into Trump's agenda. He is not going to have budgets. He's not going to be able to make appointments. He's also going to face a whole lot of oversight, investigations, hearings. The next 2+ years are going to be very messy for him.
Okay. Will he accept the result if it happens?
He's going to accept it because it wasn't him on the ballot. So that is where he gets, as he did last fall, he says, oh, well, it was just bad candidates. It was bad campaigning. I was not being judged on this.
Okay. Brett Bruin, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, Brett Bruin there, President of the Global Situation Room, former Director of Global Engagement at the White House. I should say, during the Obama presidency, I should say there's a photograph here beside us of Brett and his family and his little son meeting Barack Obama in the Oval Office wearing a pair of yellow Wellingtons. Red Wellingtons, my apologies. I'll say that again. I should say that, you don't mind me mentioning this.
No, it's fine.
I should say there's a gorgeous photograph of Brett in the Oval Office with President Obama, with his family and his son wearing a pair of red Wellingtons. Is he the only person ever to have worn Wellington boots in the Oval Office?
Based on my research of the matter,
extensive research,
it was a very Irish day, and you were waiting outside to go in to see President Obama. And one of the things that is remarkable about President Obama, on the one hand, he can deliver this great oratory. On the other hand, you know, in interacting one-on-one, he can actually be a little bit less self-assured. And I think that was one of the things, both for my wife as well as for my son at the time, that was remarkable. Here's the leader of the world, and yet, you know,
who can dominate a huge auditorium with it, the power of his words.
And one of the things that I always was frustrated about was how much he lives in his head. And so, you know, very academic, very professorial. And so you're sitting around in the Situation Room trying to get a decision out of him. And he's weighing the nuances of, you know, whether or not we're sending HIMARS or Javelins to Ukraine. And at the end of the day, you know, I think one of the lessons that history will take from Obama's presidency is that we need something between an Obama and a Trump. someone who's, yes, is willing to make decisions faster, but not as recklessly as Trump.
Okay, really interesting. Thanks so much for your time, Preparin.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.